Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
I'm Professor Shane Higgins, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist at the National Maternity Hospital at Holles Street, is with us for this Wednesday's Making Baby. Shane, how's things?
Good, thanks, Andrea.
We were talking last week about C-sections and everything involved. Today we're talking about, well, being induced. So when and why might that need to happen?
Well, I suppose a good starting point would be to say, if you can avoid it, avoid it, because it is typically a longer road, a more difficult road. But the reasons you might be induced would be if you get to a point in the pregnancy where it's felt unsafe to go any further. And for a lot of women, that's 41 to 42 weeks. And that's kind of almost a routine reason for inducing patients. But then there's lots of other reasons. If the baby's small, if the baby's very big, if you have a blood pressure problems. So if there's maternal or fetal concerns, then you would be induced for those reasons. If you've been through an IVF program, if you're an older mum, typically over 40, then you won't be, it's not recommended that you go too far beyond your due date for concerns over how the placenta is going to continue to work. So there's lots of reasons why. And I
how common is it, sorry, to be?
It's much more common than it used to be. And an interesting statistic, and I use our hospital as the example, but in about 2018-19, we induced more women who were pregnant for the first time than went into spontaneous labour. And in 2022, we induced more women for the first time who had previously had a vaginal birth versus to those who went into labour spontaneously. So it's becoming increasingly more common that we induce women patients than labour spontaneously.
Is that there's just too many risks involved with?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons. The recent guideline that was published by our Institute of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists here in Ireland now recommend offering induction to women at a week past their due date, whereas prior to that we would have offered women the opportunity to go up to 2 weeks past their due date before they were induced. Women are coming in saying, look, I'd like to be induced rather than waiting for 10 days or 12 days or 8 days past my due date. I'd prefer to be induced. Mm. And as long as they're informed about what the risks and possible benefits are of an induction process, well, then I think that's their right to choose. But we're seeing more and more of that as well.
I know some of our listeners are probably, munching over lunch, but what's actually happening to the body when you're induced?
Well, what you're actually trying to do is you're actually trying to get the patient from a starting position of zero into labour. And I describe it for patients as a three-stage process, one where we ripen your cervix, which will allow us to break your waters, which is the second stage, and then starting oxytocin drip to get the contractions going. So you're taking a patient from not being in labour to try and get them into labour. If you succeed and get somebody into labour, then the likelihood is whatever was going to happen to them had they laboured spontaneously is still going to happen. So if they end up with a section or an instrumental delivery, there's a good chance they would have ended up with that anyway. But it's the failing to get a patient into labour that often leads to them having that caesarean section. So the caesarean section rate for somebody who's induced, who's pregnant for the first time, is about 45%. Whereas if they labour spontaneously, the risk of a caesarean section is only about 10 to 12%. So it's a much higher risk of caesarean section.
What are the other measures or things you can do before you get to being medically induced? Like I know friends have talked about the sweep before,
so
and this kind of thing.
Stretch and sweep. So if you examine the patient in the lead up to an induction process and you find that their cervix is already favourable, so the cervix needs to be favourable for you to be able to stretch the cervix and sweep the membranes. And this facilitates the local production of chemicals which might initiate labour. So that's the purpose of a stretch and sweep. There are many ways in which you can make a cervix favourable. There's the pharmacological methods, the prostin gels, the propessaries. There are now mechanical methods which are becoming increasingly popular but still use much less than the pharmacology. And that's like the dilapan rods, the balloons which will stretch the cervix and help get those cervical changes there so that you can break the waters.
Yeah. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. I'm going to come to some of these listener questions. So we have the sweep.
Yes.
The other?
Look,
measures.
I mean, look, the patients will often say, well, what about the castor oil? What about the exercising, the lunges, the squats, the physio ball? There's no scientific proof. If somebody were to ask me, listen, what can I try that might be of some benefit? I would say acupuncture. If I was to say anything at all, acupuncture might get the contractions going, help the, you know, the that uterine excitability and pains leading to the onset of labor. So if you the stretch and sweep is one which can be done by any one of the healthcare providers that's looking after you, your midwife, your obstetrician, but acupuncture as well might be of help.
Yeah. And then presumably when you talked about the sweep and someone else is asking here about hormone gels, you don't need all of these. Maybe no. One of these might work or not.
So the sweep is something that you would do before you embark upon the formal induction process. So it's done a few days before you say, look, we're going to induce you on Thursday. We'll give you a sweep on Tuesday to see if it works between Tuesday and Thursday. If not, and you get in on Thursday, then depending on what your cervix is like at that particular point in time, we'll determine whether you need the gel or the pessary or the dilapan or the balloon to ripen your cervix to allow you to move on to the second stage, which is break the waters.
This listener was induced the very first time with their first baby. They're now dreading the same thing happening again. They're due in September. So is there anything I can now do to avoid this?
Well, first of all, it's less likely to be required on your second baby. If you've had a successful vaginal birth first time around, you are more likely to go into labour by yourself. So be reassured by that. Secondly, if all is well with the pregnancy, you get to your due date, you get to 5 days, 7 days, 9 days, 11 days past your due date, give yourself that opportunity. Say, listen, can we just hold on for a few more days to see if I can go into labour by myself? Try the sweep, maybe try it more than once. But even if you do, and I'll say this to patients who've laboured before, whether they've been spontaneous or induced, an induction of somebody who has laboured and delivered successfully in the past is a much more straightforward process than it is for somebody for the first time. It tends to go much more smoothly, more successfully.
Okay. Hi Shane, I'm due my third baby in July. I was induced on my first and laboured at home on my second. I ended up leaving it very close on my second though and had to rush to hospital. Am I now best to arrange to be induced on my third in an effort to prevent panic?
Well, that's one option. And again, I will discuss that with all my patients. If we've had a history of a precipitate labour where it goes really quickly and you either miss it or you just about get to the hospital in time, there are two ways to approach it. One is to say, let's examine you 39, 39 and a half weeks. If the cervix is very favourable and you know you're going to be successful with the induction, then yes, that's a consideration. Come in, everything is planned, arranged, controlled. The other alternative is to say, look, as soon as you start getting any strong pains at home, come straight into hospital. And if you live a long distance from the hospital, that can be tricky in itself. So you have to negotiate that element of the problem if you're going to go down that route. If you're an hour, hour and a half from the hospital, you might not have time even if you leave the house as soon as the pain starts. So they're the two options. Present early if you come in spontaneous labour, or if your cervix is becoming favourable or favourable, just arrange induction around the due date.
087 1400 106 is the number. There's loads of messages, Shane, coming in here. I was induced for both births. The first was a dream delivery after the gel. Expected the same the second time round. It was much different, required several stages of induction and a long labour. My only regret is that I'll never experience going into labour naturally.
Well, if you're only going to have the two children, yes. But I mean, if you are going to have a third or go again, it may still be the case that you don't need to be induced. And that kind of description of what happened to that patient is very unusual. If you had a dream labour with the gel the first time around, the expectation on behalf of the caregivers was that that's exactly how it would go again. And for it not to go like that is unusual, not unheard of, but unusual. But if you go again a third time, you can still potentially have that spontaneous onset of labour.
Now, this listener underwent a stem cell transplant for MS 4 years ago. It involved chemo, which I was told would render me infertile. My periods have returned, though, and are regular, so I'm hoping to try for a baby with my husband. Does Professor Higgins think it could be possible?
Absolutely, it could be possible, yeah. I mean, sometimes chemotherapy will have a short-term impact on ovarian function. The simplest way to establish whether that's possible or not is to determine whether you're ovulating every month or not. So go to your GP, they can do some very simple blood tests, or you can start using home predictor kits of when you're ovulating. If you're ovulating, then that potential is absolutely there.
Listener says, my consultant wouldn't perform a stretch and sweep in advance of my induction. I ended up having a failed induction followed by a C-section. So I'm wondering, what are the conditions in which you or consultants wouldn't agree to a sweep?
They're off the top of my head, and I don't see any circumstance. Even if you've had a previous cesarean section and you're looking for a VBAC, then a stretch and sweep is a way of kind of encouraging your body to get things moving by themselves. There's really no reason why you wouldn't, particularly if, like, I mean, for example, if you had a placenta previa, which is a low-lying placenta, you'd never do an examination of the cervix. But, you know, that aside, this patient went on and had an induction. So I see no reason at all why they wouldn't have had a stretch and sweep in advance.
Please ask Shane. I had a baby 2 years ago. I've since fractured my pelvis about a year ago. It feels fine now, but I'm scared to plan for a second. Will I be okay to get pregnant? And will this have an impact on whether or not I could have a planned section on my second birth?
Yeah, so I had a vaginal birth first time around.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they've since fractured their pelvis about a year ago. Feels fine.
Yeah, so I suppose what I would... Yes, absolutely okay to get pregnant, for sure. What I would do if I were the patient's obstetrician is I'd contact and liaise with the orthopaedic team that looked after her from the point of view of her pelvic fracture, see what the implications of that are, see if they've got any concerns about a vaginal birth, first of all. But if the patient, for fear of something happening because of the previous fractured pelvis, was looking for a cesarean section, that's certainly an option that could be discussed also.
This listener is a first-time dad. His wife is due her first scan in the morning and he's wondering, what can they expect?
So if this is an early pregnancy ultrasound, and typically they're done between 8 and 12 weeks, what you can expect to see is the fetus with a positive fetal heart. You might see some flickers of movement. You'll know whether it's a singleton pregnancy or a multiple. And essentially what you're trying to establish on this scan is that all is well with the pregnancy. One baby, two babies, fetal heart, correct measurements, and maybe a little bit of movement if you're lucky.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be talked through all of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And everything will be pointed out during the course of the scan.
Listener's 31 weeks pregnant. Baby is measuring very large and will have to be induced. Sorry, I'm wondering, will I have to be induced or get a C-section? Not sure which one to go for or what to do. Last child was born spontaneously and no interventions.
I suppose the first thing is, what was the weight of the last baby? If the last baby was a good size and this baby is measuring up to be similar, maybe slightly larger, you may be able to deliver this baby vaginally without any intervention. But I think one of the things that we are probably seeing a little bit more of in clinical practice is, if there is a measurably large baby on board, is consideration being given to inducing maybe just leading up to the due date or at the due date, rather than letting the patient continue to go for another week or 10 days with the growth of the baby that's associated with that.
If we didn't get around to your question, we'll keep it on file. We'll try and do that next Wednesday. If you want to listen back to any of our other chats, conversations with Professor Shane Higgins, they're all available on the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live and Making Babies. Shane, thanks a million for joining us on the programme. That is Professor Shane Higgins, consultant, obstetrician and gynaecologist at the National Maternity Hospital. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.